Hi there, welcome to the latest edition of The Front Page. And we have two meaty, whopping jump stories to discuss in this week's show. Firstly, there will be changes to the race programme at the 2025 Cheltenham Festival. We shall be discussing that. There almost certainly will be a new British champion jumps trainer, and that almost certainly will be Willie Mullins. We'll be discussing that as well. There almost certainly wasn't a Guineas winner running in a race at Newmarket last week, although maybe I'm wrong. We'll be discussing both potential eventualities there. I am almost certain that I am Lee Mottershead, and absolutely certain that the colleagues sat next to me are Jonathan Harding and James Stevens. Hello.
All good?
Well, you're very good. And potentially sweaty palms, because we begin this week's edition with the news that our esteemed West Country correspondent is clear in the Racing Post Coral Naps competition with 6 days of naps to go. Do you just paint a picture of your current situation?
So, as it stands, I have jumped the last and we're into the final week and I'm idling badly and praying for the line. So, it started in October. I've taken it pretty seriously this year. Some good runs. I've got 6 days to go. It's done on profit, so anyone can really find a 100. I mean, saw there was 150-1 winner yesterday. The first thing I did was look at the table and gone, oh no, please tell me no one's tipped that up. But yeah, it's been pretty crazy. I've got a lot of people who are keeping an eye on it, which is quite nice. Someone actually came up to me and wished me good luck that I'd never met before at Newbury on Saturday, which was quite bizarre.
Really?
Yeah, oh, very strange.
Isn't that
a couple of people did actually, yeah, but one person I'd never met before, which was really nice. So, fingers crossed, but it's going to be a long week for me and not much sleep.
And just to highlight the extra sort of sauciness to this, you are about, well, we're recording this on Monday morning, you're about £15 in front of the Racing Post on the nose team.
Yeah.
With the Racing Post Lambourne correspondent, James Byrne, in third, about £21 behind you. So this could be like Willie Mullins and Cheltenham Festival Grade 1, a 1-2-3 clean sweep for Racing Post. And of course, you'd quite like to be on the top of the leaderboard.
I certainly would. And I think James's doesn't include the win he had at Musselburgh last night. Not that I'm tracking every single one that happens. But no, there's some shrewd judges on there. And even the ones that are down the table a bit, you wouldn't be surprised if they picked out a 33 shot. So wait and see.
We have our fingers crossed for you. Jonathan, are you set to come to money anytime soon?
I have a rather more mixed bag with my tipping, as you can imagine, but yeah. I'll be sure to tap James up for a round if he does win it.
Indeed, that would be no doubt completely in order. We wish James well, and before we get going with the stories, I have good news to pass on to you in that our exciting, excellent Smart View feature is now available on the Racing Post app.
Fancy a bet, but find it confusing? Do not fear. Smart View is here to help you. We've taken a traditional race card and removed all the jargon and abbreviations which can be daunting for newcomers. The result is a race card that means making informed choices and picking winners is easier than ever. Our racing experts and data scientists have created an algorithm that puts everything a seasoned punter would consider into the attribute bars you see on the race card and assesses each runner with an overall score out of 100.
Welcome back. So time now for story one, and the Coral Racing Post Naps competition table leader, James Stevens, is going to present that story.
Yeah, so it was Cheltenham's final meeting of this season. Not their season, that's next month. But we found out a bit more about what the future of the Cheltenham Festival would look like, had a chat with the jock club's managing director and the racecourse boss Ian Renton about some of the issues that have been flagged at the Cheltenham Festival, and in particular, is the quality of the races. And he said there's bound to be changes to the race programme. So Cheltenham are going to sit down, they're going to address some of the issues that we're going to discuss now and make some changes to that programme to better reflect, to create the meeting more competitively. What those changes will be were not confirmed. I did ask Ian Renton, who said he wouldn't speculate which races they were, but was aware that what had been written about in the press was the areas they're going to address. So we can be relatively confident that's going to include some of the novice chases, potentially novice hurdles, things like the cross country. The Cheltenham Festival is undoubtedly the week where the jump racing is thrown into that spotlight, and the quality of jumps horses, the quality of whether it's Ireland or Britain, which is strong, that's where the spotlight goes. And the festival has to, well, A, it has to be competitive and geared towards creating a product which is very, very competitive. People want to bet on it, fans want to enjoy it, and racing industry people want to win it. But at the same time, you can't just chop and change the Cheltenham Festival programme because, okay, well, we haven't got many two-mile chasers, so let's change that. It has to be an ambition towards it. So finding that balance is going to be crucial. So we're going to see some changes to it. And what they might be, well, everyone seems to have an opinion. He said there were some sensible ideas, there were some not some sensible ideas. I've got my own ideas, but we'll wait and see. But it certainly sounds like they're addressing some of those issues which we've raised, which is a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think we can be pretty confident they're not going to wax the Gold Cup or the Champion Hurdle. there are certain areas they are going to focus on, as you said, James. There seems to be a consensus that novice chases are an area they really have to look at. So once upon a time, back when some of us were young and before some of us were born, there were basically two or three novice chases at the Cheltenham Festival. There was the Arkle, there was the what is now the Brand Advisory, the Broadway Novices Chase, and there was the National Hunt Chase. But in those days, the National Hunt Chase was a four-miler, and it was completely different to the modern National Hunt Chase, and tracks a totally different sort of horse, certainly not championship-class horses. Whereas now, we have the Arkle, Grade 1, 2 miles, we've got the Turners, Grade 1, 2 miles, four, we've got the Brand Advisory Broadway, Grade 1, 3 miles, and the National Hunt Chase, basically 3 miles, five, 3 miles, six, Grade 2, and there aren't enough horses to go round. So, Jonathan, what do you think they will do with those novice chases? Get out your crystal ball and make a prediction.
I think the National Hunt Chase is the vulnerable one, from what I've read in the conversations I've had.
Even though it's the festival's oldest race?
That seems to be the race that performs poorly in terms of betting turnover. I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but it might have been the worst performing race at the festival this year.
Small field.
It's probably not doing the job it is supposed to be doing. It's had some very good winners, but I suppose that's a lot of the reason it's not doing the job it's supposed to be doing. I think that's probably the one that they'll look at going forwards.
I think they'll look at it too, James, but I think the race that will probably go is the Turners. The Golden Miller Novices Chase?
Yeah, the Golden Miller,
Although it's slightly more complicated because, of course, the Golden Miller, the Turners, forms part of the wider jumps pattern, and there would have to be industry agreement, if you like, to get rid of a grade one over 2.5 miles. But I think the feeling is that if they brought back the 2.5 mile novices handicap chase that we had before the Golden Miller,
which is now at Sandown,
and doesn't get anything like the sort of feel that Sandown that used to get at the Cheltenham Festival. But they bring that one back in. They have the Arkle and the Brown Advisory either side of it. But then what do you do with the National Hunt Chase? Because bringing a 2.5 mile notice handicap doesn't really do anything to solve the National Hunt Chase problem.
No, you're right. I agree, bring back the novice handicap chase. I think that's a sensible thing to do because it was always a very, very competitive race, and quite clearly, 2 miles in the Arkle, 2.5 miles in the Turners, there isn't too much between those two trips. And I don't think the horse population over the last, really since it's come out, has ever been in a way where you think both those races are going to be huge fields and very competitive. So the fact it's there, it does lean those good horses. They can go one of two ways. And if you look at a horse like Gaelic Warrior, he probably could have won both, you know. You don't look at it and go, that's one division, that's another division. Yeah. They're very intertwined. And even in the build-up to the meeting, one of the frustrating things that I found is which horse is going to go where, and you're trying to work out on the puzzle. So I thought the Novice Handicap Chase was a fantastic race. I would love to see that back. The National Hunt Chase, well, yeah, I don't know what will happen with this because I know tradition is such an important thing, and to chop it would be a... It would be a really big thing. So I had a look and thought, what would I possibly do in a way to keep it? And I come up with two ideas, two of which might fall into the unsensible list.
Yeah.
First one was, if the jockey wanted to invest in it, is to create a Grand National bonus scheme.
Okay.
So to essentially say the winner of that race would get a certain bonus if they could win a Grand National Tour. You almost use that as a platform for a trial.
That season or the following season? Or
that season, possibly. Okay. I mean, the Grand National is a very much a changed race.
Absolutely.
Novices can win the Grand National.
Yeah.
Instead of horses being sort of campaigned away from the Cheltenham Festival with Aintree in mind, it could be a way of getting those sort of quality horses to run in the race.
Could that not take horses away from the brand advisory?
It could do. Yeah. It could do, but it already is.
Yeah, okay.
If you're not going to get rid of it, you've got to do something.
Okay.
But the second one I thought was to restrict it to a trainer with a certain amount of horses or less, which again would make it really potentially a small field size because you're making it difficult. But I think you've got to do something with it in the current state or it's got to go. And
The problem they've got with it is, again, so if you are a traditionalist and you don't want to lose a race, you might say, we'll take it back to what it used to be, which
rest.
Was mains at the start of the season. It was a totally different sort of race. But that then, I think the jockey wouldn't do because they would say that has potential welfare issues.
Yeah.
Welfare's not quite the right word, but they obviously don't want to.
There were concerns
horses
about that race.
Yeah,
and
they don't want to see horses losing their jockeys all the way around the race course. So that makes it tricky. If you try to replicate what used to be the Cathcart Chase that existed before the 4-day festival and have it as a first and second season race, you then were going to take horses away from other races by doing that. So it's not straightforward. One other thing I wonder if they'll do, Jonathan, based on discussions I've had, is follow up, I think, on Ruby Walsh has suggested this, which is bar novices from handicaps, or certainly some of the handicaps, because you look at some of the races, like I know the way you're thinking. Won the Kim Muir, got into Kim Muir, 0-1, 4-5 race, and on his next start, he wins the Mildmay Novices Chase, a Grade 1 at Aintree. And realistically, he could and should have been in the Broadway, the Grade 1 over 3 miles, not in a Kim Muir. We've had instances of novices winning the County Hurdle. Now, although the sport has tried to do something about that by adding one extra race into the number of runs those horses have to have before they get into handicaps, it's still not completely solved the problem. So could that be an issue, trying to look at novices in the handicaps?
I think something holistic like that is arguably more sensible than getting into the nitty-gritty with this race or that race. That is something tangibly that could be introduced that would boost the field in those novice contests where there seems to be a bit of an issue field size-wise because you have the intermediate trips and horses spread out and will they, won't they run. Actually, if novices had to run in that company, it would boost those races and you'd think allow a few more good, solid handicappers to come into the, well, to where they ought to be in those handicaps. And it was interesting to hear Patrick Mullins essentially saying a similar thing.
Actually, it was Patrick Mullins, wasn't it? I might have credited Ruby Walsh wrongly there. I think it was Patrick Mullins.
Yeah, Patrick Mullins saying the same thing, even though he obviously is from a yard that is not taking advantage is wrong, but quite rightly run novices in those races because they have so many novices. So, I think that is something that they need to be looking at. We kind of illustrated just here how difficult and complicated it is. And when I spoke to Nevin Truesdell in the week, he said it has to be data driven and it has to be quite carefully mapped out because you knock one domino down at the festival and suddenly the program for the whole season can be pushed out of kilter. So it requires deep thought.
Do we think the mayor's program is sacrosanct?
I think the mayor's program is definitely an area I would look at as well. Three other things on the list was number
one,
I'm a big fan of the EBF final.
Yeah.
You reminded me the other day at Newbury that used to be run at Cheltenham.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
For those of a certain vintage, will remember that the EBF final, now at Sandown on Imperial Cup Day, used to be run at Cheltenham's April meeting.
Yeah.
Basically the same race.
I would love to see that part of the Cheltenham Festival roster.
Okay. So you'd have to lose a race to do that?
Yeah, if something went, even if something went, if the National Hunt Chase was to go or something like that, that would be, I think it's a really competitive race and it's a really good race.
Yeah.
Cross country all day long should be a handicap.
Yeah, as it used to be.
As it used to be.
Yeah.
And the Mayor's Hurdle, I would say it shouldn't be. I mean, it's a Grade 1 now. It wasn't always a Grade 1,
grade 2,
was it? It was a Grade 2, where you had horses that were penalised as to what they did. It makes it a bit more of a competitive race on paper. But that's what I'd do with a mayor's programme. It's difficult. I know Paul Keighley, when we came here after Cheltenham, was saying, well, they should put it on the mayor's day at the Cheltenham Festival and at those days. I think there's still a place for a mayor's race. And I think that as you've got now a Mayor's Novice Hurdle, which, to be fair, has been a really competitive race over the years because you've got really good field sizes in it, that's like a logical next step for those horses. So there is a route towards them, yeah. And keeping mares in, there's obviously huge benefits. So they're definitely things to do. But
and it is, you can see the logic in saying move one or more of the mares races away from the Cheltenham Festival somewhere else. But equally, you can make the point that the mares program, the boost to the mares program, has been hugely successful in getting more people to run mares, and the fact that those mares races are at the Cheltenham Festival has also been an
massive,
because
people
we know, if you look at how that novice handicap chase is fed at Sandown relative to Cheltenham, we know that people just want to have runners at the Cheltenham Festival. So it's not as simple as saying move the mares hurdle to April and you'll have exactly the same race.
100%.
You won't have exactly the same race.
No, and you're bang on, because if you were to think about the mares chase, not my favourite race by any stretch, but those mares of that sort of horse, that sort of quality, where would they otherwise go? Well, it'd be a Champion Chase, or it'd be a Ryanair, really, if they're graded quality. Mm. And you'd be looking at them going, well, some of those wouldn't be 20, 40 to 1. You wouldn't see a point, really, of aiming them towards those races, because they wouldn't seem like they've won. Suddenly, they've got this opportunity. And as you say, it's at the Cheltenham Festival, so they'd target it. The other point on the novices, which I think is really important here, mm-hmm. particularly the novice hurdlers, is that what has happened in the last few years is where Ireland has become so strong. If you run a novice hurdler in Britain compared to Ireland, you're going to bump into three or four which are very, very good, most likely. So getting marks in Ireland and Britain is so different. If you run to an RPR, say, of 120, in most novice hurdles in Britain, you're probably going to win. In Ireland, you could finish third or fourth. So there is already a disadvantage they're at. So those opportunities for those horses to run more means that the handicapping system is more fair. So I would definitely be behind this idea of novices staying in novice races, because they are so different to assess, these two horses on either side.
The same sort of logic was also used when the Ebor handicap on the flat had its prize money increase. One of the condition stipulations about that was that three-year-olds were taken out of the race, because it was felt that if three-year-olds were in the race, they could in effect manipulate it.
Yeah.
And you're encouraging people to keep three-year-olds in training as four-year-olds if they know that the following year they're not going to come up against horses run three times. One other interesting aspect is that Ian Renter made clear, the Cheltenham boss, that last week, that what they won't be doing is amending the seven races over 4 days programme. I was messaged by someone connected to one of the big yards on Saturday while I was at Newbury to say that, why is that? And this argument that our customers say they want seven races over 4 days, can we actually believe that? Is it more the case that the race course commercially needs seven races every day, and that would customers be just as happy with six races? And if you did that, you could actually axe four races and take us back more to where we were when we had a three-day festival. Thoughts?
Can't win, can you, Lee?
No.
We wanted, some people, not we here, but some people wanted a five-day festival not all that long ago.
That would not have been a good idea.
Well, you know, this is the, I mean, you've touched on it there. It's what works commercially for the Jockey Club as well as what works for the programme, what works for, you know, I think 4 days is, that needs to remain. Obviously, that seems to be the winning formula at the moment.
They can't afford for it not to remain commercially.
Exactly. So 4 days works. If you're then cutting races, I don't know that. You'd have to see the data, wouldn't you? I think.
Yeah.
You'd have to actually get on the ground and find out whether people do need seven races, whether the betting turnover reflects it, whether the viewership sort of warrants having seven, or whether you could strip it back and make it more quality over quantity with six. I'm not sure I would have a strong opinion.
James, before we move on, you also spoke to Ian Renton about some of the other commercial aspects of the mm-hmm. Cheltenham Festival, why people didn't go last year that had gone in years before. Man, did a 40,000 drop in attendance from 2022 to 2023, roughly another 11,000 drop from 2023 to 2024. One thing that was raised regularly was the cost of accommodation in Cheltenham, which is, for example, a much smaller place than Liverpool, which hosts the Grand National, has more hotel rooms, and more people actually go from Liverpool to the Grand National meeting than go from Cheltenham to the festival. Did Ian have any potential solutions to that issue?
I would struggle to think that anyone has a potential solution for it because it is such a big issue. I mean, you mentioned the smaller town. Well, Cheltenham's got about 115,000 people that live there and well over 200 go. So it's completely different to any other big sporting event. That said, the hotel prices are extortionate given in the town. And it is such a big put off for customers. Cheltenham were aware of that. Cheltenham have been told this by people. People have said to Cheltenham, we like Cheltenham. We love coming here. We enjoy what you put on, but we can't afford it. And that's the thing. They've been pushed and they've been pushed and they've been pushed. Ian said he's spoken to local hoteliers about what can be done. How much sway Cheltenham Racecourse have over it, I don't quite know. But it's a good start that those conversations have happened. It needs a lot more people to come together and join forces to make some tough decisions. But crucially, and I think the biggest thing that happened this year with it, is that the hotels were not 100% full. Yeah. And that is a warning sign. That's a huge alarm bell for those hotels that previously had gone, yeah, possibly are costing a bit much, but now they haven't sold out, they're going to begin to think, okay, maybe we have gone to the edge here. So it's a long process. It's still expensive if you look at it in advance. And what Cheltenham can do, it is somewhat limited, but look, it's a good start those conversations happened. It's also worth saying they were their car park issues. It was a huge talking point through the week. They're going to look to invest in it, which is good because quite frankly, it was a bit of a chaos last year. So look, I mean, Cheltenham do get a lot of stick, and they are the sort of home of jump racing, as they call themselves. They should be premium in every way they do. It's good that they're addressing some of these issues that are raised rather than just sort of going ahead in 2025 without worrying. But still some areas to resolve, but I'll be fascinated to see what they do.
Yeah, and of course, the problem is you talk about investment there. Investment will be difficult because the Jockey Club forfeited millions of pounds at the Cheltenham Festival that it would have hoped to bank because of the falling attendance. The Cheltenham Festival is the Jockey Club's biggest revenue driver. And in that sort of situation where you're actually cutting prize money, bringing in investment for a big project like that.
Yeah, please don't ask me to tell you how to fix that because I have no idea.
No, well, car parking's not my best issue either, as anyone who's seen me try to parallel park would know. Okay, that then was story one. Before we move into story two, here is some exciting news about offers relating to the Racing Post Members Club and subscriptions. Get 50% off your first 3 months in the Racing Post Members Club. As a member, you get access to the digital newspaper exclusively available to members the night before. You'll get daily tips from the likes of Pricewise, Tom Siegel, Robbie Wilders and Paul Keighley. Enjoy award-winning journalism from the industry's best writers and watch replays from all British and Irish racing now available within the Racing Post app. Subscribe today and get 50% off your first 3 months. Welcome back to part two of The Front Page. This time, it is my turn to present a story, and I'm going to talk about a story that will run through all of this week and reach its crescendo on Saturday. That is the British Jumps Trainers Championship, and in all likelihood, Willie Mullins on Saturday will be crowned the first Irish-based winner of the trainers title since Vincent O'Brien, the legendary Vincent O'Brien, took it twice in back-to-back years in the early 1950s. It always looked likely that Willie would be a major player in the title race. That was the case going into the Grand National. It became ever more likely after Ian Maximus won the Grand National. And now he's around 20-1 on following a superb day on Saturday at Ayr when his four winners included McDermott, who got the Scottish Grand National, the Coral Sponsor Scottish Grand National, on the bob in a tremendous finish. That now leaves Willie around £180,000 clear of Dan Skelton, with Paul Nichols a big chunk behind Dan as well. So it does look as though Willie is set to get the title as we speak today. Looking forward to having a runner at Fos Las on Monday. He's got entries scattered across Ludlow and Perth before we get to Sandown on Saturday. Look at his entries as we speak now before entries have closed at noon, but he's got like nine in the celebration chase. He'll have plenty across the rest of the card. It looks as though he's home and hose. Rewind back 8 years and he was in similar sort of situation, not quite as strong obviously, when he went into the final day of the season at Sandown chasing Paul Nichols. On that occasion he didn't send as many runners as he'll send this year to Sandown. He had the second in the first three races, and in the end the title went to Paul Nicholls. Jonathan Harding is almost certainly not going to go to Paul this year. Paul chasing his 15th title. Dan Skelton's hopes now look pretty slim, because with a big lead, 180,000 lead, and with horses like El Fabiolo and Gaelic Warrior among those under consideration on Saturday at Sandown, Willie looks home and host.
I think he summed it up best when he said, almost very helpfully for the gathered journalists, that he had one hand on the trophy, because that pretty much sums it up for me. And this isn't a case of sending out the kids in the final week of the season and it's all done and dusted. He's leaving absolutely nothing to chance, sending an El Fabiolo over to Sandown. He's, you know, it might not be so much a, he won't be clinching it at Sandown so much as actually potentially winning one or two of those big races, looking at the type of horse that he's sending over. I mean, it's invigorated for me. I don't know what you guys think, but I know a lot of people are a bit, maybe flippant, a bit non-interested in trainers' championships, jockeys' championships. I think it's sort of an extra element that we maybe make a big deal out of. But I think it has invigorated the final couple of weeks of the jump season, because it can peter out a little bit after Aintree before it rises back up. In Britain, I mean, before it sort of rises back up for that season finale. So, yeah, it's been good to follow. And I almost would have liked him not to have won the Scottish National, so it was a little bit more up in the air going into that final weekend. But I'm sure Dan Skelton and Paul Nicholls will still, they already had good horses to run at that meeting, so I'm sure they'll still go ahead with it and try and end on a high.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not sure, James, that final bob of the head on Saturday in the Scottish National will end up making too much difference. Bear in mind the horses that Willie's got entered on Saturday, and he's got so many horses too, that it might be in a situation where he might not win a race, but he'll get as much in place money as the winner might get. And one aspect too is that William Mullins has all the best, well, not his most of the best horses. William Haggie said to me at Newbury on Saturday, he has all the toys. And in that sort of situation, when most of the toys are with one trainer in Ireland, at least his title race means that we're going to see some of those toys, hopefully, at Sandown on Saturday, because the sight of horses like El Fabiolo and Gaelic Warrior will greatly add to the afternoon.
It will, yeah, and having top quality horses like that is great. It's a Grade One race. You know, let's not forget, this is top quality jump racing. This is Premier Racing, of course.
Premier Racing.
You want to see the best horses, and I think if you were to look at that Grade One without the Mullins horses in there, you'd possibly be scratching your head a little bit, thinking, who's going to turn up and who's going to win it? And that race has in the past sometimes not been the strongest Grade One in the world. So great that we get to see these good horses. And if it was, say, El Fabiolo versus Gaelic Warrior, that's a cracking race, regardless of whether it's got any implication on the trainer's title. I mean, yeah, look, I think we've talked in this studio about domination, about the Mullins domination. And of course, it's a huge part of what's happening in jump racing at the moment. But I think you have to stand back and really admire what he's achieved this year. I mean, it's very easy to say, Willie Mullins has got all the best horses, he's got all the best toys, whatever. He isn't missing. He is not missing. You look at the amount of good horses he's got. Inevitably, they don't happen. They don't come off. The Gold Cup, the Grand National, the Scottish Grand National, the Champion Hurdle. Winning all those races is a huge achievement. Anytime, but actually getting it right on so many days with all of these horses is quite extraordinary. And I think the other key person here who's not had any comment is Paul Townend. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has just gone about his business. It's all been about Willie Mullins and what he's done. He hasn't got it wrong. He hasn't made mistakes. He's not sort of jumped one and fallen on a gallop in the champ, which inevitably, if you say you're going to have 25 odds on shots, a few of them are going to get beat just because of the nature of it. He's got it right with every single horse, and without really stealing the spotlight, the Scottish Grand National was the only sort of big race that he's sort of chosen wrong as well. Like he's not been on the right one. So what he's done, what the pair of them has done, has been extraordinary. It's great that they're going to show up at Sandown, but it is of course another sign about how weak British jump racing is compared to Ireland, and particularly Willie Mullins. And given the fact that you look at races like the Supreme, the Ballymore, the future is not particularly glowing that this is going to change. And what is ever going to stop Willie Mullins is probably Willie Mullins himself. So it's a scary thought in many ways, But you do have to respect him this week, I think, regardless of how much of a negative person like me you are.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'd say that the fact that you have to go back to the early 1950s to find someone who's done this, Vincent O'Brien. And we know we see it on the flat with Aidan coming over and challenging winning the British flat title, but it hasn't happened over jumps. The amazing thing too is that, as Patrick Mullins made clear in his column for Us Racing Post post-Cheltenham Festival, at that point, he didn't think his dad was even really thinking about the British trainer's title. You sort of wonder what position he could be in next season if he starts the season thinking, well, I'm going to have a proper go at this as well, because I've got so many horses, I can not jeopardise my Irish title challenge over the winter by having a few more runners in Britain. Although that said, that would then need a cultural change from Willie Mullins, who tends to concentrate on Ireland in the winter and then Britain and Ireland in the spring. One interesting angle, as Chris Cook points out in his piece today, those four winners that air on Saturday, yes, one was 8-11. The others, 18-1, 16-1, and 7-1. So punters, they obviously didn't win them all with his first ring, but they ignored these Willie Mullins winners.
That, to me, is the big takeaway. And going into next season, and whether or not he makes more of a concerted push earlier on in the season for the British Championship, is he's able to win these races with horses who's are relatively unconsidered. He's not sending over his very best horses, and he's still winning the big Saturday races. And if he decides to target a few more of those quieter Saturdays with what he would consider fourth or fifth string, that's really just a demonstration of his power, I think, that horses that in Ireland wouldn't even be top five in that division for him are able to come over and win as they do. That just speaks to the ammunition that he has. And I'm not among those that sort of knock him for that. I think he's got himself into that position with a tried and tested system. He gets the owners, he gets the best horses. It's on everybody else to try and catch him up, that sport. And I have no doubt that Paul Nicholls and Dan Skelton in particular, and let's not forget Nicky Henderson, of course, will be thinking already about next season. How do we get that firepower up, and how do we compete?
Yeah, absolutely. And James, just to confirm, the West Country Racing Post correspondent can't nap horses trained by Willie Mullins this week, can he?
No, unfortunately not. No. Unfortunately not. But I may have a... Maybe I should drop a message and say if he fancies coming over and having like a satellite yard, maybe I could steal some that way. But it'd be very helpful to have Willie Mullins. And one final thing about on the Irish dominance is a really interesting fact about Cheltenham this season.
Go on.
Second most winning most trainer at Cheltenham this year is Gavin Cromwell, which is absolutely extraordinary when you think about it, because that is... Gavin Cromwell came to Cheltenham, which is the home of jump racing, which is the central point of British jump racing. And he has come over to Cheltenham because he's found races over there are easier to win than back home. I mean, this isn't one of Ireland's top trainers. This is sort of that second tier, isn't it, behind Gordon, Willie, Henry de Bromhead. Then you're into that sort of second. He's just outside the top three. He's coming to Cheltenham and winning races because Ireland is so strong. So there's some real signs this season about how strong Ireland are. And it's not good for the West Country nap stable, but it's great for Irish racing.
Should we talk a bit about flat racing?
We've got
two classics taking place next weekend. Jonathan, talk us about flat racing.
I will do, yeah. So we'll start with the 2000 Guineas, shall we, which is the first classic of the season in Britain. We had two trials last week in between all the jump stuff, for those who follow. All the jump stuff, Scottish National and the like. So they didn't really... The hope might have been that they would have added a bit of spice to the 2000 Guineas market and we'd have a real superstar emerge. I'm not sure that that happened. With the 2000 Guineas, Hartum was a good winner of the Craven.
Yeah.
Once upon a time you won a Craven like that, you'd probably be in the top three in the betting for the 2000 Guineas. But such is the quality of the top two that it didn't really cause any shockwaves. It did pay a compliment to City of Troy, as if he needed one, based on his two-year-old form, because... Yeah. City of Troy put Hartum in his place, not once but twice, very easily. Hartum's stablemate, Rosalian, had a bit of a boost because Richard Hannon obviously and Sean Levy obviously view Rosalian as their big hope, perhaps their biggest hope for a number of years. A great interview with Pete Thomas at the weekend, Richard Hannon. And it was, and then the Greenham was won by a gelding. who's obviously can't run in the 2000 Guineas. So it wasn't quite what we were hoping for in terms of adding a bit of life into that market. It is now in vogue to go to that race without a trial. 14 of the last 20 winners went without a trial.
Good stat.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Courtesy of Scott Burton. Shout out, Scott Burton.
Yep.
Straight to the 2000 Guineas. 1000 Guineas, slightly different picture. Uh-huh. That one looked like it actually needed a little bit of clarity before the trials. We had Ilang Ilang was favourite after stablemate Opera Singer came out. Again, mm-hmm. Aidan O'Brien, very good two-year-old form. We now have Fallen Angel as the favourite.
Who galloped at Newmarket.
Unfortunately not in a race. Yeah. But still, we got to see Fallen Angel, mm-hmm. At least in a workout. Again, that's the popular route now, is to go straight there fresh. The Nell Gwyn was won by Pretty Crystal, who's going to be supplemented. But again, probably not the type to maybe threaten, you'd think. Deserves to take a chance in 1000 Guineas, of course, but the top two sort of on juvenile form, she'd have to find a little bit with them. Dance Sequence, I think, might be the surprise package. Stepping up to a mile should bring out a lot of improvement. Was quite unlucky in running, yeah, in that Nell Gwyn. And then the Fred Darling, in keeping with the theme, Fulgaria, looks likely to go to the French and doesn't have an entry in the 1000 Guineas. So as far as trials go, they weren't really that helpful in terms of shaking up the whole thing. But still, we've had a little taste for now and we can look ahead to those first classics and beyond.
Yes. James, what have you got in the West Country?
Very little. Was at Newbury on Saturday.
Yeah, we were. Yeah.
When I got the sort of late call up to cover it, I was quite excited because I do like the Greenham as a meeting, and then I, yeah, sort of read the entries and stuff, and it was a little underwhelming. I don't think the two sets of trials at Newmarket and Newbury had the sort of star names that you've seen. It is more fashionable now to go straight there. And also, a few of the trainers have told me that because of the wet, really miserable winter, yeah, we've had, horses have just been a little bit slower, and I think there's a case of just not wanting to rush horses. So it's possibly was always going to happen in a number of years. If you get weather like that, the trials perhaps aren't going to be as informative as they were. Newbury, I was impressed by Fulgaria at Newbury. I thought she won well. I think the experience really was the key thing for her. She had six races in Italy before she went. Really emotional winner, given that it came for Marco Botti, who was, yeah, in attendance of Stefano Curci's funeral in Italy. So that was lovely for connections that they got to celebrate there, and they're thinking of him, his wife, on course. And if she could run well in the French Guineas, that would be lovely to continue that story. Esquire, a gelding win in the green, and was we were discussing what we were going to do for the day, and it was a bit of a tricky one. But yeah, I mean, for me, I'm Rosalian. I've managed to steal. I thought I had 33s, but a 25's anti-post. So I'm all, ooh, behind him. And I think to be fair, City of Troy and him, I think they're two really smart horses. So even if it's not quite on the patch, I am quite excited for the Guineas this year. It looks two really exciting horses. Those two in particular just could be anything. And seeing how their careers go and where they end up will be pretty fascinating.
You've got 25s, but do you think Rosalian will win the 2000 Guineas?
I think City of Troy will win. I think City of Troy is very, very special, and yeah, it's just a case of how good could he be. It's exciting, you know, we've got a real superstar, and how good he is we'll wait and see.
Could be a good Guineas meeting for Carl Burke and Danny Tuttope and Steve Parkin.
Yes.
Fallen Angel. Knight Raider worked nicely as well.
Yeah.
Comes there via two wins at Southwell or Southall, depending on your preference. That is not a normal classic preparation, but underlines the work they've done at that track with a different racing service is bringing in different, better horses.
Yeah. It's a slightly novel route into the race. Sort of crunching the numbers for an upcoming piece and looking at the routes that these horses take. And generally speaking, it's win a Group 1 as a juvenile, have your first start in the Guineas. So we wait a little bit longer for the bubble to burst with a few of them. But this is, yeah, fairly unconventional, but has the benefit of having run this year. And yeah, why not?
Ask you a question, quiz question. What links the Craven, the Nell Gwyn, the John Porter, the Greenham and the Fred Darling? Correct. They're
all Group 3s. I know the answer now, yeah.
And I just thought, you know, as we've got a few minutes, you're fine, aren't you? You don't mind waiting around a bit. As we've got a few minutes, I just want to mention my column.
This is a very good, easy way to get a plug. As soon as you, it's all come together, well played.
I have penned today what I think is a slightly myth-busting column. There's this view in British racing that in prize money terms, we lag behind our neighbours, particularly in that top end bracket among those horses that are in that group of horses that we talk about as being susceptible to a talent drain. They get sold to the Middle East and Australia, and clearly that happens, but it happens across Europe. And if you actually look at the numbers, and over the weekend I was using Google Sheets after my beloved actually showed me how to use Google Sheets and not have to use a calculator for everything. Give me some numbers here. The year's 23 most valuable Group 3s in Europe will all be held in Britain. The average total price fund for a British Group 3 in 2024 is $91,303. In Ireland, it's $51,099. All French Group 3s are pegged at €80,000, which is about £69,000. Britain has 59 Group 3s worth £70,000 or more. If you look at listed races, Ireland has three €100,000 or brackets £86,000 listed races. Britain has 12 that offer a superior financial reward. So right across the board, Group 3 enlisted, Britain actually trumps Ireland and France. None of that was sort of penned as a way of knocking Ireland and France, but more the fact that within British racing, among participants and industry folk, there's this view that we are massively underperforming compared to Ireland and France. The numbers don't actually bear that out at all, and it's just the opposite. And hopefully that might provide some confidence to industry participants, leaders and promoters to have a bit more confidence in the product.
Hope so, and it sort of being in keeping with your nearest neighbours is important. I suppose the other view would be that we're still a little way behind Hong Kong.
But we always will be.
That's the thing.
Unless you're going to come into an inheritance and devote it all to British racing.
Yeah, different funding model. I mean, that's where the drain is going slightly further afield. But it's good. You know, Britain has that reputation. It can still attract investment. It had to be up there with Ireland and France, who are sort of the ones trying to tease it away and sort of take that position as the go-to place. So, yeah, it is promising. How much is that potentially skewed by Premier Racing and increased investment, or is it not?
There's certainly been increases this year. I've just picked out a few. You look at the Group 3s and the listed races at the Chester May Festival. They've really come on in leaps and bounds. Like, also races like the Chester Vars and the Ullman, they're Group 3s. They've gone up from 120 to 140,000 this year. Some races at Ascot have gone up and at other tracks as well. But they're already on a decent level last season. I just think, James, it's one of those that... The fake news? People have this fake news thing that we are inferior to our... And clearly, that's not to say we don't need to have more pride and try and be more competitive with other jurisdictions, but things aren't as bad as perhaps we perceive them to be.
No, and there are some trainers that I speak to, and that more so over jumps than flat, but who are very aware of where the prize money is and where to look for it and what races are worth what. And I think that if you look at those races, I'm sure the correlation between the better quality winners of those and if there's more money on offer, you'll get better quality races. Because people are aware of where the prize money is, it's the job of a trainer to find what's a valuable Group 3 and what's one that is considerably less value, whether that is, i.e. in Britain or France or Ireland. So having more money is always going to be a good thing for that, obviously. I think crucially, though, is that those meetings that can club together, so, I mean, we say Premier, but the Chester May meeting, which you focus on, having really competitive racing already at a product which is established, you know, a really good, fun meeting, the prize money's good, people always want to go to the racing. That is what the sport is thriving off, because the thing that British racing has, which every other jurisdiction wants, is the prestige.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to Japan in May and excited by that. And for all Japanese racing is fantastic. Everything about Japanese racing is amazing. They still look at European races and they still look at the Derby and go, wow, what a race that would be to win because of the prestige we have. And that is so special. And kind of hanging on to that and making sure we promote that as well is a key part. But the prize money is important.
I reckon, as I'm looking at our cups now, and they're either gone cold, the liquid inside them, or they are empty, it's probably time to bring the show to a conclusion. And so I will declare the winner of this week's show. What did I talk about? I talked about a trainer's title. Really important. But yeah, that's going to conclude on Saturday. So I'm going to say we'll leave that one maybe until next week. Who knows? You spoke about the classic trials, which were probably meaningless this year. So I can't really give it to you. You tried very hard. And you were bolstered by my column. But even so,
I'm going to concede on that one.
Yeah. So on that basis, James, Cheltenham Festival, likely changes, you win.
Yeah, it's always Cheltenham, isn't it? Cheltenham is such an important thing. And look, let's hope that this is the start of bringing the Cheltenham Festival even better for it is in 2025.
Hope you win the NAPS competition as well.
Yes. Fingers crossed.
Yes, yes. We all send our best wishes to Mr. Stevens, albeit he's been chased by Racing Post colleagues and we're not trying to decry them at all. That ends this week's show. Thank you to James Stevens, to Jonathan Harding. Thank you for watching. Tom Kerr definitely will be in this chair next week. We'll have lots of meaty issues to discuss. Join him and the panel then. Until then, bye-bye.